This is the Get Healthy 360 podcast, where we discuss topics related to your physical, mental, financial, and spiritual health. Your host is Dr. Chris Ferguson, board certified in anesthesiology and pain management. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and you should consult your primary health care provider before making any decisions related to your health. And here's your host, Dr. Chris Ferguson. Oh, one more thing before we start. If you like this episode, please consider rating us 5 stars. We would really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Welcome back to the Money Seed Podcast. Today, my guest is Elaine Stogeberg, and I'm joined here in the studio with my business partner, Chris Ferguson. Elaine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Dr. Stogeberg, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I guess right now you are, even though we call you Dr. Stogeberg, you are no longer a practicing physician. How did you make that transition from having a really well-paying, secure W-2 job to now being a full-time entrepreneur?
Yeah, excellent question. It certainly wasn't what I planned. You know, if you had asked me 10 or 15 years ago, you know, someday would you be, you know, a full-time real estate investor, be running a real estate company, it just would have been very confusing to me because I was on, you know, the medicine path, doing medical school, residency, all of that. We had the good fortune that when my husband Nick and I first got married, we rented out the home that I lived in and we moved into his home. So that was kind of a benefit that we had, is that we both owned homes before we got married, and that allowed us to become real estate investors. And then we also had the good fortune that Nick and I both came from childhood poverty, just a deep narrative of struggle with money in our families of origin. And when we met each other, we knew that that had to stop with us. And so we were very forthright asking people that were, you know, a generation ahead of us, like, what have you done to be successful financially? What have you done in your marriage? How are you raising your children? You know, all of these questions. And there was this very common theme that came up that we learned in our early 20s of real estate investing. And at the time, I didn't think I would go to medical school. I was working on a master's of health administration and policy. So I thought I would go into business, which, you know, I've kind of come full circle. But we would, you know, talk to accountants or attorneys or physicians, people in the tech world. My husband's a career technologist. And they would all say, you know, well, it looks like I'm making my money in law, or it looks like I'm making my money in tech, but really I'm taking that money and investing in real estate. And I'm just so grateful that we had all those seeds planted by people that we trusted early on in our lives. And so we started doing real estate investing with that home that was my primary home before we got married. And then bought our first, what I call purposeful investment. We saved up for about 2 years. We bought a house with all cash. We did most of the renovations ourselves. Like, we were there until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning every night for about 6 weeks, just working on that house. Did a cash out refi, kept that property. And that was really when we had that check in hand when we did the cash out refi that completely replenished our bank account, paid off all the credit cards that we had spent at Lowe's and Home Depot, all of those places. And we had more money than we started with. And we had the property, and it was cash flowing because we had a resident in it. And we really just said, I want to do this as many times as possible until we reach financial freedom. And so we did. And there was a lot of hard work along the way. I know, I'm sure we'll talk about that journey during our time here together. But we just kept putting one foot in front of the other and really knowing that that was kind of a big focus for us in life. And then when we reached financial freedom, we're like, you know, do we stop? We really enjoy this. And along the way, people had asked, like, hey, can you teach me how to invest? Can I invest alongside you? Can I just give you my money and you can invest it? And so that's how we ended up having a private equity firm.
Amazing. So it sounds like you started with single families. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you started with the Burr method. Mm-hmm. What does the ceiling look like? I mean, how many different times can you hit, you know, rinse and repeat on that process before you have too many properties, or you just lose track of things, or what's the limit there?
You know, that is my fear, that we'll have a property that we just sort of forget. Luckily, with really good property management software and a really good team, that's never happened. It would be unlikely to happen because our software gives us, you know, our vacancy report every day. But we haven't found the limit. So right now we have about 1,000 units here in Rochester, Minnesota. We have about 400 units in Tacoma, Washington. We're vertically integrated, so we do all of our own property management. We have a staff that cares for our properties. We've done a cash out refi several times on any individual property, right? Like the longer we've owned the property, the more times we've done subsequent cash out refis on those properties. And, you know, at this point, we don't really think of a limit. We think that, you know, this is really our calling. It's what we're very good at. We enjoy doing it together. We're able to impact our community in so many ways, buying often very distressed properties and improving them. So we get to see it firsthand, you know, when we drive around the streets and you know, do community events, then we see the impact that we're having in our investors' lives. And $1 billion in 5 years is kind of a target that we have. And then we'll see from there.
How did you start your property management company? Did you ever use a property management company and then transition to having your own, or did you just start off self-managing yourself?
So we started off self-managing. So that first property I had lived in, and so it felt like a little bite to, you know, to bite off. I felt like, you know, I understood the maintenance of that home because I had lived in it for several years. Coincidentally, it was just about a mile away from the home that Nick and I were going to move into when we got married, his home. And so we chose to self-manage. And again, just so grateful that that's just kind of how the cookie crumbled and one thing led to another. When we got to about 25 properties, it was just challenging for us to manage them ourselves. So there was always something to do. You know, before that, when there was say 10 or 12, days would pass in between say a maintenance ticket or needing to, you know, go take new photos because one was turning over, you know, those sorts of things. But when we were at about 25, it was an everyday thing. And at that time, I was still practicing medicine. Nick was still doing technology. We had probably two children around that time. So it was just getting to be too much. And so we had to make a decision. Do we hire third-party property management and go down that route? Or do we create our own property management company? Which is a not common question, right, for people to come across. But we just believed so strongly that operations was really where the extreme majority of our wealth was coming from, that we were doing our own renovations. We were overseeing all of that. We were doing our own management, very careful with resident selection, maintenance, all of the things that go into making a real estate investment profitable. And so we decided to go down the path of creating a property management company. Again, not something that we, you know, planned years in advance. It was really a decision kind of born out of pain of, hey, we need help. We're always getting phone calls. We're always doing these real estate errands. It's too much for us now. So let's hire someone and build this company. And then just one thing led to another. And today we have a staff of over 40 managing all these units.
I feel like the first employee is probably the hardest one to hire. Mm-hmm. How did you figure out who to hire and what did you look for?
So we really had kind of two rounds of first hiring someone, and I want to share both of them because I wish we had just skipped straight to number two. So the first person that we hired was just a very part-time 1099. This person was a stay-at-home mom, had some interest in real estate investing, and we were so afraid, or at least I'll say I was so afraid. I think my husband always had more of a kind of a business sense for building this than I did. But I was so afraid about that additional cash outlay and just really focusing on the scarcity of it. So we had this really loose arrangement with her that we would basically just call her and say, hey, there's a maintenance ticket to go respond to, or can you go show 123 Main Street to John, or can you, pay these utility bills, just whatever we needed. And it turned out that that didn't really work because we didn't have a consistent schedule. We didn't have a consistent set of expectations. She kind of didn't know what to expect. And any of the scarcity that I had around what we were paying her, I learned with our second first hire that I'll talk about, that all of that was just, it's just truly nonsense. Like when you hire someone in your business and you hire well, that person generates more profit for you. And if you don't have a plan to where your employees are generating more value in the business, then you need to rethink your plan. You need to rethink, do I need to hire? Do I have a good set of work for this person to do? Do I have a clear business plan to drive value? So that first plan, even though I thought it was the safe route, it really didn't work. And then we, you know, kind of stepped back and really decided we're going to hire someone full-time. We're going to hire someone full-time, salaried, benefits, like really create, you know, a quote unquote real job for this person to join us in taking care of our properties. And we did an exhaustive search, you know, lots of word of mouth, asking for referrals. We eventually found a really amazing woman who had a background in social work and a background in hospitality. She was a manager of a Marriott hotel chain. And it was just all of a sudden, it was just obvious that it was the perfect fit for, because we really believe that property management is a customer service industry first, and made that job offer to her. And it was super scary because I had this belief that every dollar that we paid her was a dollar that we weren't having for our own financial freedom. And that was just completely backwards. And then I saw in the first several months that, oh, wow, she's taking care of all of those things. So that frees Nick and I to go focus on growth again, the things that we're so good at, to focus on what is our strategic plan and how many acquisitions can we have. And maybe we could start working with investors because we're not focused on paying utility bills and servicing maintenance tickets. And then just bringing in hire after hire after hire and saying, there's this need in the business. If I find a person that is just excited to do this work, that has the right skill set for this, then their salary is an investment in the company. It's not just, you know, a sunk cost. It's not like you're just throwing the money away, which I think a lot of people think when they're first hiring. Certainly I did, out of fear.
What did that look like getting back to the transition from like a W-2 job to just relying on real estate to pay the bills? Did you or your partner quit their job first and the other one kept working full time, or how did that transition look like?
Yeah, so that also was scary, right? So you're hearing this theme that along the way, like there's a lot of fear, right? I think it's easy for all of us as humans to look at people that are maybe a little further ahead of us on the journey and think like, oh, it's just always been great. And I definitely want, you know, the listener to hear, like, if you feel fear, that's totally okay. That's totally normal. We had a ton of that. So we got to a place where, you know, when we looked at all of our rental income after all of our expenses and everything were paid, we felt like we could have what we considered to be like level one financial freedom. So that was that we could pay for health insurance, we could pay our bills, and we knew we had a little bit of a buffer, but certainly not like true freedom in terms of, you know, vacations and the lifestyle that we wanted, but just kind of getting by. So when we got to that number, we really started talking about Nick leaving his career. So he was in technology, I was in medicine, and we had this unique opportunity where at that time, I could take a part-time job at a local hospital working on the weekends, and it was tough. I had to work from 5 p.m. on Friday until 8 a.m. on Monday, but I would get paid for each weekend that I worked. And so, born out of fear, we took his salary and we said, I can replace that salary by working 26 weekends this next year. And I was willing to do that because I really believed that having him in our business full time would accelerate things in ways that like we didn't even know were possible. But then I had this like huge safety mechanism that basically I was going to work my tail off and completely replace his income. So there was this freedom to it that, you know, even if he didn't make a single penny, like we would be okay. I would just have to basically work double. And then it turns out that in the first several months, he was able to build the business. He's a real estate agent, so he was able to get, you know, commissions and new acquisitions and all the things that we needed to continue to grow the business. And then I was able to say, you know, I really don't want to work 26 weekends this year. So I started giving some of my shifts away to other doctors. I think I only worked maybe 12 extra weekends that year, but that's how we did it, is we basically looked for like a no lose opportunity. And it did mean that I had to be really willing to step up and really have, like, quite frankly, what would have been a really terrible year, right? If I had truly had to work all 26 weekends through that year. And then, you know, who knows, maybe Nick hadn't launched and he had to consider going back to tech. But we were willing to do that because I really believed in him and I believed in our company. And I believed that if I took some short-term pain, I could have, you know, long-term big gains. And that's exactly what happened. And then I left medicine a year later. That again was born out of pain. So that was during COVID. It was 2020. We had three children at the time. And it just seemed like every day we were getting phone calls from school that school's closed, someone's had an exposure, someone's tested positive. And we had three children. So the Department of Health algorithms, like, we don't want to talk about that because it's miserable. But basically it was like, if one of our kids had an exposure, no one could go to school for 2 weeks. Well, that's really challenging when you're a full-time psychiatrist. You're constantly canceling patients and trying to get other people to, you know, take care of your refills and all of those things. That's hard in medicine, period. but particularly in psychiatry, where with your patients, there's all sorts of issues around abandonment. And, you know, we were working on this in therapy, and then I don't get to see my psychiatrist for several weeks. So I looked around and I said, you know what? We're financially free and we have this business, and I'm causing a lot of pain to myself. I'm causing a lot of pain to my children. I'm causing a lot of pain to my patients. I don't need to do any of this. I can just take a big step back and say, at some point there will be a vaccine. At some point, kids will go back to school. Everything will settle down. Until then, why don't I just run the business? And when I need to be with the kids, I can do that. And I can do the business when I have time to do that. And so join the business full time in 2020. And then by 2021, when, you know, things had settled down with COVID and there was the opportunity to go back to medicine, it was just so obvious that I would stay in the business full time.
And how did you manage your kids during this growth period? Because it seems like your husband and you would be like very, very busy. So who watched the children?
So we have 4 children. We have a 1-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 7-year-old. And we like to joke that we just like to do everything at scale. So we want, you know, a million properties. We want a ton of kids. We just like to, you know, live large. Our kids are in full-time school, and our little ones are in full-time daycare. Through that period with COVID, we had that buffer that, you know, I would work from home, or we would bring them into, you know, our own office because we weren't exposed to anyone else except our own family, or he would watch them or I would watch them. So that was a bit of a challenge in that, you know, 2020, early 2021 period when COVID was really raging. But today our kids are in full-time school, full-time daycare. We have a full-time nanny and household manager. Really believe that as entrepreneurs, we should be outsourcing as much as we can at our home as well, so that our home is taken care of by our nanny, our household manager, and then I can be here in the business, my husband can be here in the business. So really just applying the same leverage skill set that we have in the business to our family life as well, so that we're either working or when we're home with our kids, we're solely focused on our kids. They have our undivided attention. We're not worried about dishes or laundry or those sorts of things. We have our nanny taking care of all of that.
And Aileen, what kind of tips do you have for people who are thinking about starting a business with their partner?
You know, Nick will say, which I think is really true, when you do business with your partner, there's no such thing as like an okay day. Every day is either like really amazing or really bad. And so you train yourself to figure out how can I have a really amazing day, because no one wants to have terrible days over and over and over. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, right? Because there's just so much more emotion when you're in an intimate relationship with someone and raising children with them and living with them and then with them all day in the office. So a lot of the principles that Nick and I live by are really putting the other person's needs first. And, you know, I'll wholly admit that I learned that from Nick. He just wakes up every day and he asks me, what's the number one thing on your mind and what can I do to serve you? Well, when someone asks you that every day for a few years, you start to think, huh, I need to ask him that when I wake up in the morning. And if you just live in that paradigm, I wouldn't say it's effortless, but it's pretty close. And just, you know, constantly checking in with each other of how do you feel about this? What are your plans here? What would a perfect day look like for you? What would a perfect deal look like for you? Where do you see the business going? What do you want the structure of our schedule to look like today? And just knowing that, you know, when there's two strong players, you can fight each other, right? Or even go just a little bit apart, but then you're quickly diverging. Or you can just constantly be checking in to making sure that you're staying in lockstep with each other. And if you do that and you're really going in the same direction, you can go so far, and it is just so fun because you have this person to look to and say, like, we're doing this together. Like, do you remember when it was our first deal or our second deal or our first child or our second child, or, you know, moving into a new home or this new vacation? Like you're experiencing so much of life with this one person and you're building it together. And it just feels, there's just so much energy that flows from that.
When you were building this Black Swan real estate company, was it a linear growth or was it more of like a slow growth and then inflection points were just exponentially jumped? And if so, what were those inflection points?
Yep, absolutely the latter. I really think, you know, the extreme majority of businesses, personal net worth, that's usually how it goes, right? There's usually this long period that it seems like maybe nothing is happening, and it can become very, you know, demoralizing or confusing of like, well, everyone else is growing, but I'm not, or all of these thoughts that our brains tell us. And then there's that inflection point and then boom, there's growth. And that's exactly what happened for our business. So in the beginning, it was, you know, one single family home, maybe every year. And then all of a sudden it was two, and then it was five, and then it was 20. And then boom, things really exploded when we created our property management company, when Nick became a real estate agent, and when Nick first left his career and he was dedicating his time full time to the company. And then when we started working with passive investors. So we had built the train, so to speak. We had all of the pieces going. And then when we were able to bring additional capital to it to fuel the train, then that's really where there was explosive growth. But if someone's listening and they're thinking, you know, when I look at my business growth, or I look at my net worth, or I look at my income, and it's just kind of like hanging out, like be asking yourself, are there things happening that are going to lead to this inflection point? Because in my experience, that's how it happens for most people.
So you have a ton of experience. And what I think what I value is that you have it sounds like a wonderful working relationship with your husband and your whole family. So you offer a lot of services. So do you want to discuss some of the things you do? I know you help people acquire properties. You do property management. So I know people will ask, what are your property management fees? Because you have a very high-end property management firm. I've used property management firms that some are really good, some are not good. And I can say like yours sounds like phenomenal. And then you also do personal coaching.
Yeah. So we have a private equity fund, Black Swan Real Estate, and we raise capital from passive investors, people who want to have the financial benefits of real estate, but don't necessarily want to do the work. Well, we love to do the work. Like you can hear in my voice, I love talking about real estate. So we're excited to do that. And then we broker our own deals. We do all of our own renovations, and then we do all of our own property management. So we only manage what we own. So we don't do what is called third-party property management, where if, you know, just a regular property owner comes and says, you know, I own 123 Main Street, will you manage it for me? We don't do that. We only manage what we own inside of our, either the stuff that Nick and I personally own, or our smaller partnerships from many years ago, or the assets that are in our private equity funds. So we're vertically integrated, and that allows us to have, you know, a great deal of flexibility, a great deal of control, a great deal of consistency, quality, cost savings all the way through. So for example, we do our own maintenance, but our maintenance company basically just breaks even. We don't need our maintenance company to create a profit because we want to keep the profit at our asset level, because real estate is valued based on what's called net operating income, NOI. And then there's a multiple. And in real estate, that multiple is usually like 18 or 20. So for every dollar we can keep at the asset level, that increases the asset value by, say, $20. And we do that, you know, all the way down the vertical integration as far as we can with maintenance, cleaning, lawn, snow. There's everything we can to take very good care of our properties. We do a little bit of coaching. We have a course called Single Family at Scale. It's basically just our entire cookbook. We call like our private equity offering like the private restaurant. And then if you want to make those recipes at home, we have Single Family at Scale. It's really just a passion project for us. We put our entire business model out there. It's a give what you can model, and 100% of revenue goes to charity. So there's no, you know, big price tag on it or anything. People just give what they think it might be worth in their lives. And then that gets people access to our entire course, plus once monthly live coaching with either Nick or I. And that's really just our way to kind of serve the younger version of ourselves, of people that are doing active deals that are maybe just getting started and want someone to troubleshoot with. It's a way to raise money for the community. So we've built a playground with those funds. We've renovated the kitchen in the local homeless shelter here in Rochester. We're working with a larger organization to build Rochester's first adaptive use playground for people of all abilities. So it's just kind of this way to bring all of these fun things together. That's the way we spend our time today, is either our private equity fund or single family at scale.
It sounds like you guys did really well in the single family space. I think one of the things that can be really sort of overbearing for people just entering real estate investing for the first time is there's so much advice out there. Some people say, skip single family, go to multifamily. Some people say, go to Airbnb. Some people say, don't join a syndication. What are some of the recommendations or tips you have for someone just starting out?
Yeah, excellent question. I totally agree with you, right? That there's this like drumbeat in real estate. It's in all of business and investing, but certainly in real estate, of like short-term rentals are the only way, or office is the only way, or passive investing is the only way. And like the truth of that is none of that's true, right? We're all these unique human beings. There's 7 billion human beings on earth. That means there's 7 billion ways to do things. And what's right for one investor or one family is totally different than what's right for another investor. And people can do more than one thing. So someone can do some passive investing, but maybe have a short-term rental or, you know, whatever. So the thing that I encourage people when they hear that, right, maybe they're listening to one podcast and like, oh, today I'm going to go do a passive investment because that's what I heard on the podcast. That's what everybody's doing. But then on the way home, they listen to another podcast that's about active investing. And they're like, no way, I'm never doing passive investing. I'm only, you know, buying my own properties. And the truth is you really just have to examine your own heart and ask what works for me. What am I excited about? What fits with my age, the capital that I have available, the time that I have available, the resources, what I'm excited to do, right? If someone is not at all excited about doing active real estate investing, then they probably shouldn't do it. Because even if there's a financial benefit, they're going to dread it. And it's just another job in their lives. And conversely, if someone is really excited about, you know, getting their hands dirty and doing the work, maybe they should do something very labor intensive, like a flip or a short-term rental or something like that. So there's a million right ways, right? I have friends that are doing all sorts of different things in real estate. Of course, I'm biased toward my own business plan because that's what has worked in my life, but I've seen them have great success in what they're doing in their life. The main thing that I will say is Gary Keller, who I believe is, you know, one of the greatest minds in real estate, says that the undoing of any entrepreneur is getting bored with what works. And I really believe that. We have 1,000 doors, 250 million in assets under management. We've never sold a single thing. Everything is a Burr business model. Everything has the same paint color. I mean, it is really boring. Like truly, it is really boring, but we know it and we just hone it to perfection. And the one thing I might caution against is kind of that squirrel syndrome of, well, today I'm going to do a passive investment, but tomorrow I'm going to do this and tomorrow I'm going to do that. Really focus on creating proficiency in one thing and then asking yourself, if I just repeat this over and over and over, will this lead to really good outcomes? And don't, you know, just kind of go to the next thing and the next thing because of boredom.
I think that's excellent advice. Elaine, as we move toward wrapping up the interview, tell us about Black Swan. I'm really curious about the name. It sounds like it's a very odd name for a real estate company. How do you guys come up with the name? What kind of investors are you looking for and what kind of returns are you targeting?
Yeah, so the Black Swan theory is the one thing that changes everything. It's the one thing that in retrospect is completely predictable, but at the time you have no idea that it's coming. So it might be something like, say, meeting your spouse, right? Like most people know that, you know, they might meet their spouse at a social gathering or in a group that they're in, or maybe they're doing online dating, but they don't know who they're going to meet, right? So they're out there doing things. It's somewhat predictable, but that Black Swan event is when you meet that very special person. It's the one thing that changes everything. And we really want to be that in both property management and asset management. The way we do business is just so different than kind of the typical norms in the industry. Our private equity fund is very different than a typical offering. So we have no fees whatsoever. 100% of all profits go back to our partners until they're completely repaid. We target that for like less than a 5-year timeframe. That's when we do that first cash out refi. Historically, it's never taken more than 3 years. And then we hold that deal together indefinitely when we're all in that infinite rate of return period and split the profits 50-50 for about 20 to 25 years. So a really different model. I think it's really good for the community because these buildings have owners that are, you know, interested in them for a quarter of a decade, that are really invested in capital expenditures and improvements and taking very good care of those properties. It's great for investors because you get to an infinite rate of return. And then you get passive income for, you know, a whole generation and really build your wealth that way. So that's where Black Swan comes from. So Nassim Taleb is the author of Black Swan Theory.
Can I just so I understand that. So theoretically, I have $100,000. I give you $100,000. You hold it for a 5-year hold. Then what you would do is you would then refinance it. Give me back my $500,000. but then use the equity to hold the asset. So then it would just go forward.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yep. So money goes into the bucket and then we use the bucket to acquire and improve properties. And then we exercise a cash out refi that puts money back in the bucket, right? So then we take that bucket and give it back to investors. And then investors have all of their money back, but we haven't sold the property, right? We have our equity in the property together. And then we split all of the profits for an indefinite time period in the future, 50-50. And in future years, about every 3 to 7 years, depending on how the market's behaving, you can do future cash out refis as the properties continue to grow in value, or maybe you have subsequent renovations, like you have a phase one renovation, a phase two, on and on. But yep, that's exactly right. We've never sold a single thing.
That's a fantastic business model. And then it's really not anyone is interested to sell it at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you have $0 left in the investment. So you have all of your original capital back to put in the next investment or put a kid through college or whatever it is that, you know, you want to do with that bucket of money, but you're getting that passive income stream for about 20 to 25 years.
That's fantastic.
Elaine, where can people reach out to you to learn more about you and Black Swan?
The name of our company is Black Swan Real Estate, and our website is meetblackswan.com.
Fantastic. We'll put that into the show notes. Elaine, thank you very much for your time this evening. Absolutely. It has been a really good discussion. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and visit the Get Healthy 360 Facebook page. We are always looking for feedback and new story ideas. Thanks again, and see you next time.